Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Hello, 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 and welcome on in to the 29th episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. I'm Alex Goldberg. I am your host for today's episode. But then when David is back, I will slide back to the side host slash producer chair that I do sit at a little bit more comfortably. But I could not say no to hosting today's episode by myself. We must let Calcio Land continue on no matter what. And I actually was with David yesterday. He was so kind to treat me and my girlfriend to the Juventus-Roma fixture at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. And I'm sure for anybody who does not live in the United States, they ask themselves, where the heck is Foxborough? I'm not even going to bother explaining it to you because, let's be real, it's nowhere close to Boston. But I was super excited to go because I have never seen Juventus play live. I really haven't seen many European football teams play live at all. I actually have seen Roma play when they played Liverpool a few years ago back at Fenway Park. But that was way before I was into European football, let alone Serie A. So I'm really excited to give my take on yesterday's fixture. Sure, it was the International Champions Cup, and that's an exhibition match. But there were still some takeaways that I drew from it just by watching the game, but also being there live. And I would love to share them with you. But before I do, I just want to let you know that even though David is not here, we do have a guest. And I am super, super excited for you to hear the interview. We have the wonderful Adam Joseph. On Twitter, he is at Adam Joseph Sport. He is one of the best follows, in my opinion, on Twitter if you are into either football or basketball. And I say football because I am now calling soccer football. But he actually does like the NFL, but I specifically mean football. He's a tremendous follow. He's a big Manchester United fan, so you really must know that I think highly of him if I'm giving him all these compliments, because as you know, I do not like Manchester United. I'm a Chelsea guy all the way. But it was really fun talking to him, and I highly suggest you stick around for that interview. But let's get to the Juventus-Roma fixture, where I wanted to think outside the box in terms of how I would talk about this. These International Champions Cup games are so, you know, greatly televised that you could have seen just as much as I saw, if not more, by watching on your TV rather than being there. So my takeaways might not be specifically about the game itself, but they're conclusions that I drew while watching the game. So let's start with Juventus. And for Juventus and Roma, I'm going to say one thing that I really feel good about heading into the season for each team, and then one thing that would concern me. So if we start on Juventus, of course, they have added Douglas Costa from Bayern Munich and Federico Bernardeschi from Fiorentina, both players who really add something that Juventus might have not totally had. They have Juan Cuadrado, who is a terror for fullbacks at times on the wings, certainly very pacey, a lot of tricks in his bag. But Douglas Costa, in my opinion, is just a cut above. I always go back to his first few months at Bayern Munich, where he was absolutely dynamic. He was just so fun to watch as an objective viewer. And I'm not even an objective viewer. I'm not a big Bayern Munich fan. But he was hard not to pay attention to. And I think on Juventus, he is really going to fit in quite well. They always want to stretch the pitch so Higuain can have a little bit more room. Dybala can play 1-2s in the middle with him. So if you have someone like Douglas Costa who can play on each wing, it adds so much. And with players like Pjanic and Marchisio now being able to dictate from deep, they really can put some balls out into the space for Douglas Costa, and he can do what he does best. And Federico Bernardeschi, I think that's a phenomenal acquisition just because they already know he can succeed within Serie A. He had a great year last year for Fiorentina, so much that I really, really wanted him on Chelsea. I envisioned him as a right forward in the 3-4-3, cutting into his left peg. But he's on Juventus, and I really do think it's a tremendous get for Juventus because not only are they getting someone who can help them now, but he's still young and he can really still grow into even a better player. Not to mention he's Italian. So I imagine between Douglas Costa and Federico Bernardeschi, Juve fans should overall be happy. And if they still had Bonucci and those were the only two things that went on, what a summer. But obviously Bonucci is not on the team anymore. Alessandro is right now, much to my disappointment. But overall, I really am impressed by the acquisitions they have. David has talked about it. In the Champions League, sometimes just that great offense really wins out. We mentioned on one of the last episodes, sure, Italian teams, especially Juventus, have been so solid with their defensive foundation. But now they don't have Bonucci. They can definitely switch up the formation. I highly doubt they'll be playing as many back threes as they have in the past. So it really gives an opportunity to players like Douglas Costa, Bernardeschi, even Cuadrado to show a little bit more of their talent. Now for the thing that really concerns me about Juventus this year. They are too thin in the midfield. Claudio Marchisio, excellent player. Pjanic, phenomenal player. Both high football IQ, can pick a pass. They really know what they're doing. They can put in a nice shift on the defensive end, but they are not CDMs. Sami Khedira is perfect for what Juventus need, considering the rest of their roster and how their starting 11 probably would shake out. But if there's one thing Sami Khedira is really, really good at, it's not being fit. And that's unfortunate because he really is perfect for Juventus. They'll need him, but I just think it's too thin to rely on Khedira, Pjanic, Marchisio, maybe Storaro. I just think, and we talked about this last week, we had Jonathan Johnson on, they should have got Corentin Tolisso. I don't care that their formation changed last year and that he no longer fit perfectly into how they would, you know, line up. Jonathan Johnson said nothing but the fact that he's a complete player. He can play in a variety of roles. And I just don't think they should have given up on that so early on. Bayern Munich really got a gem of a player. And sure, Juventus's offense many times is really going to be too good and it's not going to matter. But I think against some of the better sides, the middle of the park for Juventus will be exposed. And after watching them live yesterday, that concern of mine was really confirmed. I could easily see someone like Raja Nainggolan really bossing that Juventus midfield if it's strictly just Marchisio and Pjanic trying to do the dirty work. I know Nemanja Matic is on his way to Manchester United, but I really think Juventus should have pursued harder for him. I don't know if they did or if they didn't, but I really think Nemanja Matic is a player that Juventus sorely will need against some of the much better sides. He just will do the dirty work. And honestly, Juventus is so stacked roster-wise, that's really all they're missing. Someone to just bust up the midfield. My last takeaway in general from watching Juventus play, all right, I'm going to be biased. What a peach of a ball from Alexandro to Mario Mandzukic. What a player. Juventus, if I'm strictly just putting on a Juve hat and Chelsea is not a team I support at all, keep Alexandro until he can't walk anymore. He is a gem. He's a top three left back. I'll make the argument that he's the best left back in the world. But of course, Marcelo and David Alaba are really damn good. But keep Alexandro. What a treat to watch him live. All right, now for Roma. And I really wanted to be fair, and I wanted to give just as genuine of a positive and a negative as I gave for Juve, but right now I'm just not feeling as positive about Roma as I am for Juventus. That may be stating the obvious, but there were some eye-opening things yesterday that I saw live that really would concern me. First and foremost, I referenced how great that pass was from Alexandro to Mario Mandzukic, but it happened a little too easily. So the positive is, Kostas Manolas does not want to be paid in rubles, so he's not on Zenit, and right now he is still on Roma, and that's fantastic, because keeping a player like Nainggolan and keeping a player like Manolas is really important because they're great players in the middle of the pitch. And I think that when you lose players like Mohamed Salah, it sucks. The fans love those type of players that are exciting to watch, really pacey, can do entertaining one-on-one things on the wings, but when you lose a player like the Ninja or Manolas, it's really sucking the heart right out of the team. So I think it's really good that Roma still has those two players on the roster as of today, because those are still the players that when you play ugly, they can win out games by just being gritty. And I think that especially Ninja's gritty, but I really do rate Manolas as well. Now to the negative, and I'm probably going to sound a little bit more emphatic about this one, because even though Roma lost to Juve just on penalty kicks yesterday, I think they were much, much less impressive. I think on a much better day for players like Dybala or Higuain, Juventus really could have exposed Roma a lot more yesterday. It is very concerning when you lose your manager, your keeper, and one of your center backs. And Szczesny and Rudiger, especially not being on the team, whether you rate them as really, really good players or just solid players, it's continuity that they've lost, it's a spine that they've lost, and especially in Serie A, that really, really could hurt them. So even though I don't even rate Rudiger that high, despite him being on Chelsea now, I think he's got a lot of promise, and I don't rate Szczesny all that high. But until you have really assured replacements for those players, it really could be costly losing them. Sometimes you really don't know how much you miss something until it's gone. And even though Chelsea fans may not love Rudiger, Roma fans may be missing Rudiger, and Roma fans also may hate seeing Szczesny, on Juventus not even being a full-time starter. Of course, backup to Gigi Buffon. So, I don't know. I don't love Roma's offseason, and I'm not sure even getting a player like Riyad Mahrez would make me feel that much better about Roma. Unless Raja Nainggolan gets even better at offense, then he could really just boss all of Serie A. I love Raja Nainggolan. And his mohawk, his green neon boots, awesome. So thank you, David, for letting me see Nainggolan and all his flash right before my very eyes. So those are my takeaways after getting to watch Roma and Juventus live yesterday. And as I said, maybe I was starting to think these things before the fixture, but after getting to see these teams in the flesh, my opinions and thoughts became way more concrete. And once again, a shout out to David for inviting me and my girlfriend to that game. It was really a great experience. So David, you're a mensch. All right, so David always says this is his favorite part of the podcast, but not to piggyback, this is truly my favorite part of the podcast as well. Even though I don't normally talk during these interviews, I learn so much from whoever is on Calcioland. It's not always football-centric, but whoever it is, whether it's Andrew Barker talking about variety, or, you know, we had Frank Iasola on talking about the NBA, it's always some compelling and very educating stuff. So, you know, when David said I'd be hosting this podcast by myself, he did say, let's not make this, you know, too Premier League-centric. But when I thought about having a guest, I had to really use the opportunity to at least sneak in some Premier League. So I'm so grateful he agreed to be on the show. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal follow on Twitter. I'm not just saying it because he agreed to be on this show. He really has some compelling stuff on both football and the NBA. He is the host of the I Don't Give a Damn podcast, which is really a wonderful listen where he focuses on the NBA and Manchester United. So there's something for everyone. And also the editor-in-chief of 16windsoring.com. Some really, really great NBA insight on there. Adam, Joseph, thank you so much for joining Calcioland. And good evening, because I know this is 10 p.m. or maybe even close to 11 p.m. where you are in Australia.
That was so nice of you. That was the best introduction I've ever been given on a podcast. Thanks so much. It's great to be here. Yes, it's 11 o'clock on Monday night, but no better place to be than talking about sports with you. So thanks for having me on. It's a super honor for me.
Of course. My pleasure. All right, Adam, it is no secret that you are a huge Manchester United fan. I am a huge Chelsea fan. So naturally, I was watching Chelsea's International Champions Cup game on Saturday morning as they were playing in Singapore versus Inter Milan. And Manchester United target Ivan Perisic scored a very nice goal. Now, Perisic has been rumored to Man U for a while now, so I assume you've been able to form your opinion on this. Are you a fan of Perisic on Manchester United? Why or why not?
I am. And it was actually when David talked about it on this very podcast that was the sealer for me. When you guys were speaking about him and you gave some insight about how he's a great counter-attacker with great work rate, that typical sort of Mourinho player, sort of takes us back to his first at Chelsea with Damien Duff, Joe Cole, who was so superb on the wings, things like that, and Arjen Robben. That's the biggest reason I bought in. I mean, I'm a Premier League fan. I can't watch Inter Milan every week. I admittedly don't watch Serie A every week. I'm a huge fan of the move, mainly because Perisic does things that the current United attacking crop don't do. They're all inverted wingers for the most part, or attacking midfielders like Juan Mata, who don't traditionally play wide, but play wide in the setup that United play. So I'm a really big fan of Perisic coming on board. He offers something different. He's an excellent crosser of the ball, and he's really improved as a crosser as well. I think that Perisic isn't that sexy. Let's call it the blockbuster Hollywood signing that people are looking for right in the transfer window, but he might be exactly what Manchester United needs. So people can worry about price, but if he's what the manager wants and Jose Mourinho knows what he wants and he has a very good record in the transfer market, if you look into it, you can't help but back that. So for me, I've certainly talked myself into all the Ivan Perisic propaganda that I can.
Well, that's a really good point about, you know, fans always do want the sexy signing, but it's so often the ones that aren't on their radar, the unsexy signings, you could say, that are the ones that really complete the team. So very good point. And also, you know, the transfer gods are really smiling down upon me, Adam, because when David told me that I'd be hosting this, you know, I thought to myself, all right, I got to come up with some content. This is normally something that, you know, David does, and he's really damn good at it. But the transfer gods are smiling down upon me, as David would say, because Nemanja Matic is very close to joining your Manchester United from my Chelsea. And, you know, this has been rumored for a while now. Of course, he has been rumored to go to Juventus as well. So I'm sure you've also had some time to form your opinion on this rumor. So when you first heard this rumor, how did you feel? And how do you feel now that it's close to being done?
I don't know whether you were on Twitter yesterday, but I got absolutely roasted by Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester City fans who dug up a few of my old Nemanja Matic tweets. So I actually said when the interest started that I would rather have a venereal disease than sign Nemanja Matic. I don't actually feel that way, but I didn't want him. I sort of felt like the decline that we'd seen probably in the last 12 to 18 months was a bit of a concern, particularly a player that's built on athleticism. I was looking for something different, probably along the lines of Fabinho. But how do I feel now is that I don't have any choice but to embrace something that maybe I'm not fully comfortable with. So I have to trust that Jose Mourinho is going to get a loyal Mourinho soldier in who knows exactly what Mourinho wants, and Mourinho knows exactly what he's going to get from that player. He was certainly a key part of Mourinho's last Chelsea team that won a title. And while it's doubtful that he's the player that was the destroyer of 2014-15 and 2013-14 when he joined in January with Chelsea, he's arguably still a good player now. He improves United's midfield options. He definitely frees up Paul Pogba, which really needs to be focused on.
Yeah.
Paul Pogba didn't have that player behind him that he had at Juventus who could free him up to really move into the three role in the left channel that he belongs in. So while, again, and we've just spoken about this, while he's not the the sexy foreign league signing that that fans want, and people will get really wrapped up in the price, whether it's 40 million or 50 million or whatever ends up being, he might end up being exactly what United needs. So I was wondering how you feel about it as a Chelsea fan. And while I've watched plenty of football with my best mate being a Chelsea fan, and we watch the Premier League obsessively, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I don't feel that great about it at all, Adam, to be honest. I was really hoping he would go to Juventus where he was out of Chelsea's way. I think the point of Jose Mourinho knowing how to use Matic is a really good one. I mean, Matic's best quality is being a central defensive midfielder, shoring up the middle of the park, making tackles. And I think Jose Mourinho knows how to, you know, use those type of players really well. John Obi Mikel was used in a very similar role for Chelsea. He certainly was not, you know, a worldly talented player, but he really fit a purpose. So if nothing more, even if Matic doesn't start, which I kind of assume he would start, but even if he doesn't start, I think Mourinho really knows how to use him in such an efficient and useful way. So I don't like it at all. And I think the point of him freeing up Pogba is a brilliant one. I mean, not only would Manchester United be acquiring Matic, who's a good player, they'd probably be acquiring a better version of Paul Pogba. So how could you not say that that would be a good deal for Manchester United? So, you know, Chelsea fans went from trusting Jose Mourinho blindly to literally questioning everything that he did the next season. Where are Manchester United fans at with him now? Are they optimistic he can lead them back to the top?
That's a good question. I think that, like, for me as one, I didn't want Jose Mourinho to be the manager. If opposing fans wanted to, again, dig into my tweets, they would find some very unsavory things about Jose Mourinho when he was a bitter rival. But I've embraced the personality and what he's brought to the club. I think that United fans are really with him now. Obviously, not all United fans, of course. But I think there is that renewed optimism. And I think while last season's league campaign was obviously a disaster that was patched up somewhat by the Europa League win, there's still optimism that the best is ahead. And I think it's because there's that feeling around the club again that they're going to... I think we do stick a little bit too much to the cliches that, you know, United are going to be back where they belong, and because just a genuine belief. But I think that with Mourinho in charge, you feel like the plan is back on track. And it started with last season's smart transfer market moves. I mean, I know the Pogba price is constantly talked about, but those are four great signings. We'll hope that that same transfer acumen has been applied this summer. That remains to be seen for another year, but I really think that optimism is back. There's a cautious optimism, particularly with the financial power that City have shown this summer and that Pep Guardiola is obviously willing to spend, I think that that has certainly struck a little bit of fear on the other side of Manchester. And obviously with Chelsea's blindingly good form last season when they had their 13-game win streak and things like that, United don't feel as invincible as they once were. But I think that with Mourinho, United finally has some of that swagger back that Sir Alex Ferguson somehow took with him when he retired.
Yeah, good point. I think identity is a huge part for Manchester United, and Jose Mourinho certainly brings an identity. All right, Adam, it is no secret that at the beginning of the transfer window, it looked like that Romelu Lukaku was coming to Chelsea, and it really looked like that Alvaro Morata was going to Manchester United. Fast forward to July 31st. It's almost August 1st for you. But fast forward, and those strikers are on the opposite teams. I have Alvaro Morata at Chelsea, and you have Lukaku at Manchester United. So the exercise here is I want you to say one thing that you're excited about having Lukaku as your striker, and one thing that concerns you, and then I will do the same with Morata.
All right, well, I'll start by saying just quickly that I love Morata, and I think he's a great signing for Chelsea. But to answer your question, one thing I'm excited about with Lukaku is his link up with Paul Pogba. They obviously have off-field chemistry, being such close friends. But one of the things that Zlatan Ibrahimovic couldn't do last season because of age and a lack of mobility that comes with physical decline is latching onto the passes and the creation that Paul Pogba can make happen from those little pockets in midfield. No matter where he is on the pitch, he always seems to be able to create. I think that Lukaku, with his athleticism and knowing where to be at the right time, which is so valuable for a striker, I think that's probably what I'm most excited about, that potential link-up. The concern, obviously, is Lukaku's ability to be involved in build-up play, a criticism of his technical skills. So I'm wondering how Jose Mourinho and the coaching team at United can help him improve in that aspect, because I think if there's any criticism of him, it's that his technical skills are somewhat, can leave something to be desired at times. What about you?
So yeah, my positive for Alvaro Morata is the fact that he has clearly wanted to play for Antonio Conte and vice versa. So I think anytime the player is a fan of the manager and the manager is a fan of the player, more than not, it will work out. I'm not guaranteeing Morata is going to be a legend at Chelsea, but I think it's very encouraging that they both seem to like each other so much. My negative or my concern about Morata is, you know, he's played for some big teams already, Real Madrid and Juventus, and has scored very important goals for both teams. However, he has never been the outright full-time starter, and I assume he will be the starter for Chelsea, even though Michy Batshuayi is having a wonderful preseason. I assume Morata will be the main man, so my concern is he might run out of steam. I'm not sure if he has it in him to play 38 Premier League fixtures and then play Champions League games as well as League Cups. I'm sure Conte is known for having his players in great condition. So I'm not sure it's as big of a concern as I would have if Morata was playing for another manager, but it is a legitimate concern. I'm not sure that he's used to playing 90 minutes every game for, 30 plus games. So it'll be interesting for both of us to see how each other striker is doing. You'll see plenty of Chelsea games just by turning on the television. You'll see Morata play, and I will see plenty of Lukaku games. So that's one to follow for the whole entire season. I'm excited to see how those play out. All right, Adam, staying on Lukaku, and this is kind of tying in the NBA, and you're a big NBA guy. You know, NBA super teams are forming a lot these days. There's a lot of recruiting through friendships. People say that Mino Raiola is the main reason that Lukaku went to Manchester United, and clearly there's a track record there for that argument. But I also think the friendship between Paul Pogba and Romelu Lukaku was a huge factor. Do you see Pogba's fingerprints on the Lukaku move as well? And could Pogba end up being the future captain of Man U?
Yeah, so I think that's a really good point. I think we're seeing more of that off-season recruiting with players getting together. And we've obviously seen them before in previous summers. You can see the fingerprints on the Lukaku move all over, and I think that that's no coincidence. So I think it was just teased for so long, and fans theorised beforehand, spending a lot of time together, but Lukaku's signing for Chelsea. I think a lot of people have spoken about Raiola, but at the end of the day, Lukaku's a grown man, and his relationship with Mourinho has vastly overplayed in a negative fashion, which you and I probably both knew, but a lot of people tend to get carried away with. I think that Pogba as a recruiter for United is huge. I think that, and this move sort of indicates to me, is that they are building around Pogba, not in the aspect that they're signing players that he wants. I think they're signing players who are going to suit his talents. And I think that his ability to recruit will be valuable, because I still have put this out. I said that United will sign Griezmann this summer. Obviously, they didn't when the transfer ban was reinstated for Atletico Madrid. But I think Griezmann is likely to arrive next summer. And you know who's one of his best friends? Paul Pogba. So I think Agent P, as he's starting to be called, is doing some good work. And I definitely think that he's a future captain. Andy Minton wrote a superb article about this on ESPN FC. And it's really worth checking out if you have the time. It really outlined what makes Pogba the most logical choice for the long-term captaincy. I think making Michael Carrick the captain now, in terms of making those public appearances and going to those press conferences, really alleviates the burden on any other player at United because of Carrick's experience and the fact that Carrick won't be having a big on-field role next season compared to previous years. Whereas I think that Paul Pogba is the likely captain to take over from him. He's been wearing the armband in pre-season when Michael Carrick hasn't been on the pitch. So for me, I think he's a shoo-in to be the next captain. And I think that while people get carried away with, you know, how immature is it that he dabs and dances and all these ridiculous things that have nothing to do with leadership, I think he's built to be the captain of United. The side will build, be built around him. He's a midfielder, which is generally what you look for position-wise, unless it's a central defender or something like that. I think it makes all sense in the world for him to be captain, and I think he will be.
All right. Very, very interesting. All right, Adam, I don't love predictions, but I like this prediction because I have told you ahead of time that you are not allowed to say Manchester United for this answer. So who will win the Premier League and why? Once again, you cannot say your own team.
Unfortunately, the Premier League will be going to the sky blue side of Manchester. I think they've spent too much money. Their squad is too deep for all the competitions they have to play in compared to their rivals. Let's just quickly flick through the other teams. So Chelsea have to adjust to playing Champions League football. We have probably reason to doubt their depth, which if injuries ever hit Stamford Bridge, which they seemingly never do, they will be tested. The fact they're going to have to rotate. I mean, Tottenham are moving to Wembley and they've really struggled playing on that ground. Are they going to be able to play the same style? Because we know that they're pleased to have the ground size changed on Wembley to suit their play style. It's been rejected, so they're going to struggle with that adjustment without White Hart Lane, which was a fortress for them. Liverpool are going to have to get used to continental football. United still have a few things to prove to us, I think, as a contender before we can consider them right back to where we think they might be heading. And then there's the forever doubts we have about Arsenal. So for me, there's not many excuses Pep Guardiola's got. I think he has to win the title. And if I were to pick right now, I would say that's where it's going.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I actually completely agree. Manchester City scares the living daylights out of me. I agree there's a lot of pressure on Pep to, you know, now put all the money that they spent to use and get productive results. But on paper, they are terrifying. The offensive talent they have is ridiculous. The fact that they have Leroy Sané, Gabriel Jesus, Raheem Sterling, Kevin De Bruyne, I could go on and on. Obviously, Kun Aguero. They are stacked offensively. And then everybody's like, what are they doing, signing all these fullbacks? But they're really good, talented players, as David says all the time. I don't think Pep really cares what positions they are. If they have quality, he's interested in them. So they look really, really scary. All right, Adam, the last Premier League-oriented question I have is about the fact that in the Champions League, Premier League teams have just not done well lately. There are many theories as to why. What is yours?
I think the theory is very simple, really. It's just that the Premier League is the toughest league in the world. Shinji Kagawa, when he came across from Borussia Dortmund to Manchester United, said, I believe it was after he went back to Dortmund, he said that one of the things he noticed about the Premier League is that you have to play at 100% every week. There is no way that you can get away with taking your foot off the gas at any moment. It doesn't matter what team you're playing, because if you do, you drop points and you just can't afford to do that in the Premier League. And what he said was in Germany with Dortmund, they could play at 60%. If they were still drawing after 60 minutes, they could put their foot down and bang away a couple of goals and win the game. He was saying that you can't do that in England. You can't give teams an opening. It's just too difficult every week. It doesn't matter whether you're at home or away. And it's so true. And I think as a result of that, there is no... I think in previous years, we've seen rotation on the weekends in English football to rest for the Champions League. But now that the Premier League is so strong, we're not seeing that. We're actually seeing it in reverse. And it dates back to when Brendan Rodgers was the manager of Liverpool and he rotated players out and played a second 11 against Real Madrid in the Champions League, sacrificing their spot in the Champions League in the process so he could prioritise the Premier League to get back into the Champions League next season, if you can wrap your head around that tongue twister. So it's just that it's just such a deep batting competition. Like, it goes all season. So that's going to wear you out, particularly when they don't have a winter break. So it's just non-stop for them. So for me, that's my theory, is that other leagues, like in Spain, you don't see Barcelona and Real Madrid rotate their team out for the Champions League. They keep their team strong for those midweek fixtures. And I just don't think there's that same ability in the Premier League. And to add on to that, I don't think the FA helps. They don't help the scheduling. They don't move games to help Champions League fixturing. A team can play on a Wednesday, and then instead of playing on the Sunday, they'll play on the Saturday. So the TV rights take priority, the scheduling and things like that. It's not the clubs being put first. It's what's best for the league. And I think that doesn't help teams in the Champions League. And I think we've seen that for a few years now. So I think I've been always pretty confident in that theory. And I think we've been seeing it for far too long. It's disappointing because, like you said, we want English teams to do well. Even if they're on our own clubs, you want to see English teams progress. And they're not.
Yeah, it's a great point. As much as I don't want Manchester United or Manchester City doing well in the Champions League, overall, I want the Premier League being represented well. All right, Adam, let's move out of the Premier League. You are a big NBA guy. I'm a huge NBA fan. And right now, there's a huge story in the NBA about Cleveland Cavalier point guard Kyrie Irving wanting out of Cleveland, no longer wanting to be LeBron James's teammate. And I see a lot of parallels to the Neymar situation at Barcelona, where he supposedly wants out and he wants to go to PSG. Do you see any parallels as well, Adam?
Yeah, I really do, and I was really excited for you to ask me this question, actually, because if we look at the original theories that came out of both situations, so we'll start with Neymar wanting to get out of Leo Messi's shadow, run the show for himself, be the main man, put himself in position to win awards and be that guy and be relied on, the same way that we see the Neymar version of the Brazil version of Neymar so heavily relied on, but it's not the same at Barcelona. And with Kyrie wanting to step out of LeBron's shadow, you can see those parallels. But at the same time, one of the really interesting things for me that I've noticed is the difference in each sporting culture and how that's perceived. So for Neymar, he's been discouraged to step away from that super team element at Barcelona. Like, how could you possibly think to leave Barcelona for PSG, like the French league, and just leaving like the MSN frontline at Barcelona for PSG is criticized, whereas in the NBA, Kyrie is leaving a super team to go be the main man elsewhere. But people are surprised by that because the movement in the NBA now is moving into super teams. So it's just a really interesting dynamic and a difference in the perception of how it's viewed. I found that really fascinating to me because but at the same time, Kyrie's being criticised for leaving LeBron. So it's almost a trial by media in both cases.
Yeah, and to take it even a step further, just simply, Kyrie Irving is rumoured to want to maybe play in New York City for the New York Knicks. And Neymar, of course, is rumoured to go to, PSG, Paris. So they both not only want to be the guy, they want to be the guy in two of the biggest cities in the world. So I think that's interesting as well. And also, they both have accomplished the overall team goal. Neymar has won the Champions League with Barca, and Kyrie Irving has won the NBA championship. So they don't even have that team accomplishment hanging over their head. They can rest on the fact that they have won the big competitions, and now they can really be the superstars that we all know they can be. So I really do see a lot of parallels as well. All right, Adam, let's move to Kyrie's most likely former teammate, LeBron James. Do you think LeBron James got exposed in all of this? And do you think he will have trouble recruiting players to play with him now in the future?
That's a really good, interesting question. That's something that I've been talking about a little bit on my own timeline. I think that LeBron did get exposed, but because of the changing narrative around LeBron, because we know when he originally left Cleveland for Miami, he became that villain. But by the end of that Miami tenure and when he went back to Cleveland, he became a hero again. So the way he's perceived in the media and by the hordes of NBA Twitter is vastly different now. So that expose that we're talking about, it's not been played out the same way that it would have, say, 5 years ago. So I think that while he did get exposed, it's just not happening that way. So he won't have trouble recruiting stars to play with him or players to play with him at all. I don't see that happening. He was very close to having Paul George with him. They had a deal organized before Indiana backed out and executed the trade with my beloved Oklahoma City Thunder, which I have no problem with whatsoever.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever going to have trouble recruiting. It's LeBron James. He's the world's best player. He's probably the second best player of all time already. He's never going to have trouble recruiting, even to Cleveland, which is not a major NBA city. I don't think he's going to have any trouble there. But it'll be interesting in the coming weeks and months if Kyrie does end up getting traded before training camp at the start of the season. What comes out in relation to Kyrie and LeBron, as we know, they've unfollowed each other on Instagram, which is always a big story nowadays because of the social media age. And it's going to be a fascinating thing to keep on watching.
Yeah, for sure. This is going to be very interesting to watch. Obviously, LeBron is the most polarizing player probably in any sport, period. So this is just getting started in terms of all the headlines. All right, Adam, I really like this question because it's once again combining the two sports we've been talking about in this interview. And, you know, I think I know where you're going to go with this one, but let's ask it anyway. Assuming Kyrie Irving leaves the Cavs, which would make them worse automatically, what's more of a shoo-in, Golden State winning the NBA title or your Manchester United getting to the semifinals of the Champions League?
How I wish, Alex, that United getting to the semifinals of the Champions League was a shoo-in, because with the way that the Champions League is now, you're not even guaranteed to get out of the group stage. Jose Mourinho is great at getting out of the group stage, never gets knocked out in the group stage, but I'd love to see them in the semifinals. But Golden State going back-to-back and getting their third title in 4 years is much more of a shoo-in. And if I was a betting man and the odds were better, seeing as they're so short already, I'd be throwing down a lot of money on Golden State. They're better than they were last year.
Yeah, they are scary good. They have not lost any of their superstars, and they keep adding really good role players. So I think that's the recipe to maintain your dynasty. I think they're a shoo-in to win the NBA title. All right, Adam, the last question I have for you is something that David always asks his guests on Couchland, and I want to do the same. You are a great Twitter follow, as I said. You really have some compelling stuff about football and basketball. So I want to ask, how did you get this following? How did you get to do so many cool things? You know, what's your advice for people who want their voice and opinions to be heard?
Honestly, it sort of took off out of nowhere, but the biggest thing I found was interacting. So I can't recommend enough just being on Twitter, and don't be afraid to express your opinions. I think that even if you feel like it's not a popular opinion or anything like that, because a lot of mine aren't, I think that stirring the pot isn't always probably the way I would recommend things to go, because of the way that the negativity that can be spun towards you and a result, and it can be hard to take, I think, when you first encounter it. But I can't recommend enough just interacting. So, for example, I remember when David followed me. I was at the cinema. And I remember when David followed me, I was like, oh, my God, because my brother and I were huge David Amoyle fans. Like, David Amoyle just followed me on Twitter. And I just talked to him. I just messaged him and talked to him, because we'd always spoken back and forth via mentions. And I just can't recommend that enough, because little doors open. And I end up writing. I remember I wrote a Premier League column for DiMarzio, little things like that. I can't recommend enough. Just take chances and network. It's the best thing you can do. I mean, I've got an abrasive personality, so I don't always rub people the right way and things like that. That's just the way Twitter goes. I mean, I'm Australian, I'm honest, and I'm brash. But yeah, just put yourself out there. What's the worst thing that someone's going to say is no? It's just, at the end of the day, it's just Twitter, but really good things can happen from it. So why not take a chance?
Well, Adam, I'm not just saying it. That's some really, really good advice. I completely agree about taking a chance. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So very well said. Adam, speaking of taking a chance, I took a chance by asking you if you would be on Coucholand, and you were so nice and kind to agree to be on. And I cannot be thankful enough. I know David feels the same way. So thank you so, so much for being on Coucholand, and get some rest.
No, thanks so much. And a big thank you to you and David. This is sort of like a bucket list item for me, so I can tick that one off in terms of our podcast appearances and things like that. So thank you. It was an honor.